it has aired, so you might be listening to it twice. Here we go.
Person can make such a difference just by telling their own story. Heidi, I'd like to welcome you to our show.
Thank you for having me, Donna.
Well, I am absolutely pleased. Now, before we get into your personal story, I'd like for you to tell us a little bit about your background. You know, what did you do professionally? You know, what were you involved with? Because you are an artist in my mind's eye. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I went to college to become an educator, a teacher, and I taught elementary school. And so that is my background. And I was just teaching school when the bottom dropped out of my world.
Now, when the bottom dropped out of your world, this was something that in a million years you never would have expected.
No, ma'am.
You had an absolutely beautiful life. You have a family. You have good things all around you. Tell us your story, Heidi.
Well, I was 34 years old at the time, and I was going on about my business. My little boy was 2.5, and I was experiencing fatigue and pain in the upper right quadrant of my left breast. And I would go to the doctor and say, I have pain, and they would excuse it on caffeine intake or stress, or maybe because I had nursed that it was residual from that. And so I'd had a clean mammography 14 months earlier, and that unfortunately gave the doctors and me a false sense of security that everything was okay. And then the breast started to enlarge and become red, and they thought they were dealing with an infection. And after 6 months of going through this, I saw a breast surgeon. He would tell me the same thing everybody else had told me. So within an hour, he basically gave me a death sentence. He knew what he was looking at. He said it was called inflammatory breast cancer, incredibly rare. And because the breast was so angry and red, he felt that the cancer had probably already spread. And within 4 days, I was starting aggressive chemotherapy. And, of course, I was absolutely shattered. It hit me like a Mack truck.
Yes, because the prognosis that was given to you is, we're going to do this, but we don't think it's going to work.
Absolutely. At that point, they were just desperate to buy some time. I was not operable. They couldn't go in and remove anything because the cancer was so infiltrating and large, they had to try to kill the cancer with the chemotherapy. So what I had to do is come up with a battle plan and do it as I was battling. And that became, for me, a spiritual journey as well as facing my mortality. Of course, dealing with the physical assault, the grief of having to maybe not see my son grow up, and all of these issues were going on in my mind as I'm losing parts and pieces of myself.
Now, Heidi, you said you started an agenda of your own. Now, anyone who is listening who has known of a loved one that has battled with any kind of a terminal disease, and I've known people in my life that have gone through these battles, this is a real difficult spot to put yourself in. Why do you think you decided you were going to develop your own agenda, and how did you go about deciding what your agenda was going to be for yourself, Heidi?
Well, when I was first diagnosed, I think like anything else, you're in shock and you just go through the motions. And what kept me going and made me realize I had to do everything in my power to survive was fundamentally my little boy. I think you have to have something to live for, whether it's yourself, which obviously should be the case. But for me, being a mother, I felt a huge responsibility to fight for my child. And so at that point, I started to do everything I could to find good doctors, excellent support. My mom came to stay with me to help my son so that I could get adequate rest and nutrition, and I explored all different areas of medicine as I went through this. I think the turning point, the declaration for me, is when I decided that I would survive, even though they were telling me I wouldn't, even if that was false hope in my mind,
mm-hmm.
I had to make that part of the core of who I was, even though there were days when I thought, there's no way I can get through this. Fundamentally, I believed that I would make it. And I had my friend write that on my back when I was bald and skinny so that someday I could look at it and say, I did indeed survive this.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's part of the beauty of your book, and I have to let my audience know that the cover of your book, Waiting for Wings, is so exquisitely, elegantly beautiful. And that photograph is of you.
Yes.
When was that photograph taken?
That wasn't taken very long ago. The photograph was taken approximately a year and a half ago. And my intention with the photograph, and I told the photographer this, I said, I want to show, because I had both breasts removed and no reconstruction,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to show people that that was okay. I have met so many women, Donna, who have died to keep their breast or part of their breast. I'm not advocating that every woman go out if they have breast cancer and have their breast removed. I'm not saying that. That's definitely a personal decision.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I wanted the removal of the breast not to make me less, but to be a representation of my survival. And unfortunately, when I was diagnosed, the photographs that they showed me were of women without their heads in terms of the photograph. It was like a Polaroid.
Mm-hmm.
And they took the picture right before they left after the mastectomy. So the scars were raw and horrible, and that was frightening to me.
Yes.
And I wanted to show people what it looks like when you're healed. And for me, to make it less frightening, I hope, for someone else.
I want to share a personal story of my own that
yes.
involved a neighbor of mine many years ago who was a nurse. And she was going through training. And part of her training was to work on the floor where women had gone through mastectomy.
Oh.
And when she was on that floor, I will never forget, as long as I live, the emotion that she shared, because she thought that the attitude of physicians was so horrific, and the people associated with this. And many times women, after they had had a mastectomy, she said, we'd hear their cries, we'd hear them screaming, and we'd find them just huddled in a corner, or the trauma of having to look at their body, just what you've made a comment about. And your book, when... You know, I read your book, I thought of Sandy and her story as a nurse and what women went through. She said, there's got to be something better. Heidi, I think what you've done with your book is present something that speaks to the beauty of the soul and of the person. And yours just shines in that photograph. And I can remember when I opened up the package with your book, Waiting for Wings, and I looked at this, I said, this is so incredibly magnificent. And I was so impressed with how you are so open about sharing, and you have some poetry which I would love for you to share in a moment, but how you are so open about this. And this enables women, and I think even men, because believe it or not, men are often just in shock over this too.
Oh, absolutely, and I've had such a glorious response from men. When they see this image, they are very touched by it, and that is so reassuring to know that men will still love us in spite of these losses.
Yes, and I think what's so important about that is that when someone really cares for someone else,
yes,
whether they lose an arm, a leg, you know, whatever they go through, you're going to love that person regardless.
Yes.
And I think with what you have done in your book, Waiting for Wings, is allow those that may have to go through something like this be aware that they don't have to fear being ugly. It's getting past a lot of the mystique and the myths. And not that there's nothing wrong. You know, if people want to have reconstructive surgery. I've got a sister-in-law that's had it done.
Yes.
and that's okay. That's fine.
Oh, it definitely is. What I want, and I'm so glad that this is the feeling you're getting from my book, because what concerned me when I wrote the book is that I don't want it to be just targeted at those that are dealing with cancer, but anybody who's dealing with a challenge
mm-hmm.
of the human spirit. It's all of us deal with pain. At every life is touched. It's how we cope with that pain. And for me, sometimes, like a rose bush, you have to prune away the parts that are no longer working, whether that be a relationship or, unfortunately, a body part.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever that might be, so that you can arrive at a better place and have health and life and energy, then that is really the most important thing. And then to learn to love yourself where you're at after these things occur is really extremely important. And I think my book goes through the process, and I still have ups and downs, of me learning to love who I am now after this experience.
I think that is a reality of life, because
yeah.
when you go through any kind of a trauma, that trauma is a part of your spirit. It is a part of your essence.
Without a doubt. And
yes.
I think there's a balance. You know, when I do my inspirational speaking, I always take props with me, and I have a rear view mirror that I use. And I say, what happens if you're steering and you're constantly looking in the rear view mirror? You're going to wreck.
Mm-hmm.
You have a balance of looking behind you and looking ahead. You can't stay too stuck on all the pain, but it's definitely relevant and important. So I think, you know, you're absolutely right about the trauma is part of us, and how do we keep driving on that road of life without going off the road with it.
Right. And when you can, which, again, I think is just so admirable, and it's such a joy to see this done at any time by anyone.
Well, I really appreciate that. It means a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Heidi, you have some poetry that I would like for you to share with us. Share with us the poetry at the beginning when you were writing, because obviously this poetry, this writing, enabled you to be with integrity with yourself and to also relieve some of the stress that you were obviously going through.
Yes, Donna, that is exactly what it was. For me, since I've been a little girl, I've always turned to writing, and I love to write. And when this came into my life, I bought a black journal. And when all the lights were off and my son was safely asleep, I would let my pain just spill into my writing, because I could, and you're right, it was a way to purge the pain that I was experiencing. And the first poem that really kind of encapsulates what I was experiencing, the history on that is that I went for my first chemotherapy, and they gave me something called adriamycin. Now, the nurses didn't warn me that it turns your urine this awful shade of red. So I went into the restroom, and they have a bar on the side that you hold on to, and I was very dizzy, and I, of course, sat down, and I looked in the toilet and thought I was bleeding.
Mm.
I thought the chemotherapy, it was so scary. And I just, once they came in and I was fine, they shut the door, and I just cried, and I thought, the last time I've held on to a bar is when I did ballet. And so this poem is entitled Cancer's Ballet. Position one, catheter in my chest, snagged with a crooked needle, catch of the day. Position two, deliberate drugs infused through the clear snake on my lap. Position three, hours stagnate, pharmaceuticals make their way to every pore, and I am steeped in it. Position four, the needle is pulled from the plastic jaw, I am released. Position five, I find a hollow toilet, pirouette on a frigid tile stage, hold the metal bar, urinate crimson, and plie into hell.
That is very powerful.
So to me, I was always comparing, and that would prompt the writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, how long did your therapy go on for this? Because
it was steady and strong, the intense stuff, for a year, and I continue to be on hormonal therapy to date. It's been 7 years now.
Now, there are pictures of you
yes.
where you look like a concentration camp survivor.
Yes, I do.
You are so emaciated. you are bald.
Yes.
And there is that candor in the photography. Now, after a year, you were at the end of that treatment cycle.
Yes.
Share with us another phase as you were realizing that there was that opportunity, that you, that hope was there, that your body was willing to fight, that your spirit was keeping your body going. Share with us another poem of yours.
Yes, I think the fear that I dealt with when that point came, it's called boomerang, because the fear of reoccurrence, a fear of the cancer coming back, is so substantial, at least in most cancer patients. And I have in my book a photograph of a boomerang. It says, down under in this barren land, you are shaped to return no matter how hard you are thrown. I don't want you to come back like a nasty weed. I don't want to be the soil you choose. Your seeds and roots are not welcome. I will remain desolate. So I took on a defiant attitude that you are not going to get me. You are not going to beat me. And so I became quite sassy about survival. And as I started to go on with my life, I think the big mistake I made, Donna, is I kept trying to go back to who I was, how I felt, how I looked. And it took me a while to, like I was talking about the car,
mm-hmm.
to go to the woman I was supposed to become. I knew that there was no way to ever get back. I had to learn to adjust to a new normal.
Now, when you were going through all of this therapy, when was the decision made to remove both of your breasts?
That was made halfway through. The rounds of chemotherapy, fortunately, shrunk the breast to an operable place. And the one breast that was cancerous, it really wasn't an option. The other breast, however, was completely healthy. And it took me a while and a few psychotherapists to convince the surgeon that this is indeed what I wanted. It was a decision that I made.
Uh-huh.
I did not want to deal with cancer in the other breast. I did not look at my breast the same anymore. For me, it would have been just an object of fear. So finally, I made that decision, and I have never regretted it.
With this, when you came toward the end of the year, share with us your poetic thoughts about what was going on in your mind at that time.
There's one in particular. It's called Thief. And what is so frightening about cancer is that it's ambiguous. It's microscopic at first. And I felt like it took so much away from me. And this poem is entitled Thief. I should have bolted the door and hidden the key, heard the alarms. No one saw you, master of disguise. Hands and gloves, knife at my throat. You took my breath, my hair, my womb. You pawned my libido for pocket change. Did they catch you? When will we know? I want to be left alone. There is nothing else to take. Sorry, my dog's in the background.
Well, that's all right. It's good sound effects. We don't have a problem with that. I love dogs anyway. With this, you've made such a powerful statement, because in the statement that you just read to us, poetry, there was anger. Really?
Oh,
anger.
Yes.
Why, you know, how can this tiny something infect and take over my body? What right does it have to be there? So there is a sharing of your emotions in your book, Waiting for Wings. And for those of you that have just tuned in, my guest is Heidi Marble. In this book, I can tell you, is so exquisitely done. It truly is a work of art, but it is also a work of Heidi's soul, because she is, without hesitation, bringing forth what she has experienced so that male or female, doesn't make any difference.
No.
You get a glimpse into an inside world that often is hidden away. And it is important to know about these different phases. And it's important to know what she chose to do. And it's important to know about the right of those choices. Now, Heidi, you have done something very special. You have developed a very special organization, and
yes.
It's up on your website. Tell us the name of it and tell us why you did it.
I definitely will. It's called Buttons and Dollars. And how it evolved is that when I was in recovery, trying to heal, I needed something to do. And a friend of mine gave me an old button bracelet, and I thought it was so darling. I thought that I could make them, and I soon realized that I can't sew. So I decided, oh, darn, what am I going to do with all these little buttons I've collected? And I started to put them on frames and mirrors and give them as gifts, and it was just a hobby, a way of escaping. And we moved from Boston to the Northern California area, and I would just go to all these junk stores and lose myself in finding old broken bits and pieces of jewelry. And I found a lot of comfort in doing these little projects. Well, one day in particular, there was a turning point. I was at a junk store, and I looked off to the side, and there was a naked, bald mannequin laying on the ground, Donna.
Mm.
And I looked at that mannequin, and I said, I've got a favor. That was me. So for $19, I purchased this mannequin. I get it out into the parking lot. It won't fit in the back of my car, so I end up driving home with this thing. And it became a very emotional process. I brought it in. I cleaned it up. And then I wrapped it in a bolt of elastic. And I decided that I would take those old broken bits and pieces and start to cover her with those. And it took me 3 years on and off. And I would just go, and when I get new things, I would add them. And my friends started to bring over items for me, their broken watches, the one earring that they were, you know, didn't mm-hmm. have them partner for. And all of a sudden, I had a piece of art. And then I thought, what can I do with this? And I took it to an art show, and it won.
Wow.
And then a friend suggested, what if you collected buttons and money from all over the country and created art pieces, displayed them, and help those in need that are experiencing cancer? And I said, oh, my gosh, that is what I'm supposed to be doing. So now, Donna, I get buttons and jewelry, broken pieces from women, men, from all over the country, along with notes. I have 12 life-size pieces of all colors. They go on display. We light them up. And it's like the most magnificent thing because it's a collection of human energy and the human spirit. And it's taking what's broken and making it beautiful again, things that were no longer considered useful. Sort of like myself, it was really a metaphor for my life, and people relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's become a powerful mechanism for raising funds. And I also do interactive artwork, so people come to events, and they bring things, and we do art together. It's been just an incredible experience of healing for me, and I hope for others.
Well, I think what you have done, Heidi, just in the book alone, is utterly phenomenal. I do not see many books of such quality with the story as what you have done with yours. So your book is timeless. And I know that wherever you go, whatever groups you speak in front of, you will be very recognized. Now, I'd like for you to give out your website so that people can go and research this, because there are people listening all over the world at this time, and they will perhaps listen to this program later on when they hear the archives. So I would like for you to give your website out so people can go there.
It's www.waitingforwings.com. And when you see that online, you'll see the buttons and dollars. You can click on that. And also Amazon and Barnes & Noble do carry the book in stock, and part of the proceeds from the book do go to help those who are underinsured or uninsured that are dealing with any type of cancer. And also anything that I do, part of the money always goes back to my passion, which is trying to create a difference with the life that I've been given.
Now, I want to share with my audience some of the information that has been passed along by you regarding getting a diagnosis like this and your particular kind of cancer. And that's something that many people don't know, and that is that breast cancer often is lumped together just under breast cancer, and there are 100, 200 different types that can affect an individual, men as well as women.
That is absolutely correct.
And so it's important that that message be put out there, that there are these variables, and I know that they're coming up with different types of testing that are going to be more efficient, but one of the things, there's points, 10 points that I'd like to mention.
Yes.
One, assemble a good medical team that's available and treats you as an individual. You want a team that's going to listen to you. You don't want someone that's going to just put you on this is the agenda and leave you cold. That's not what you want.
No way, because, and this is extremely important, when you become an oncology patient, this is a long-term relationship. These people become part of your family,
mm-hmm.
and you need to have a fantastic relationship with them and feel like you're not a number. So I think that's definitely important.
Also, make sure you have a place to vent your emotions, and this is something that Heidi has done through writing and through the work with the jewelry. Find survivors that understand and can embrace you. They can be an amazing strength. Use music, art, reading, or funny stories to give your mind a break and to allow you to feel joy. Understand you cannot return to who you used to be. Focus on who you can become. And borrow energy. Borrow energy until you've regained yours by accepting offers of help. But you need to tend not only to your physical needs, but your emotional and spiritual self as well. And just as she said earlier, sometimes things happen in life where we have to take away something that serves us, whether it be something physical or emotional or mental. And healing is not a destination. It's a continuum of ups and downs, and some days will be harder than others, and that's okay. And prioritize your activities and people that sustain you. Avoid draining situations if at all possible. Heidi, you have done something I think that's incredible. One, you have survived a very, very rare kind of cancer. You made choices, you made decisions, and through those choices and decisions, you have brought into form a phenomenal book, Waiting for Wings, which I think is just an incredible publication.
Thank
you. I compliment you on your courage and your clarity, and I think your program, Buttons and Dollars, is a wonderful, wonderful program. And you can go there, and if you would like to be supportive of this, you have contact information on that site, I believe, Heidi.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, that will enable people to reach you. This is something that's important. And it is important because it does happen. And you need to know that Heidi Marble is a good example for all of us, that you can fight, and you can fight with a number of tools. And part of her has been with art and with beauty. Heidi, you are a very, very special lady. It has been just a delight to have you as a guest.
Well, likewise, Donna. Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure. You're very insightful, and I definitely appreciate being able to share my story with your lovely audience.
And I will be sharing some more of the information that I have in front of me with my audience after we finish. But I, again, want to encourage you, go to her website, Buttons and Dreams. You can go to waitingforwings.com. You'll have that Buttons and Dollars site information pop up. Go in there. Look at what one person has done, and she's making a difference in the lives of thousands of people because she has the courage to share the story, and I'm so pleased we were able to have Heidi Marble as a guest today, because Heidi, we've reached thousands more.
Thank you, Donna. Oh, I'm going to cry. Thank you.
You're very welcome. This is Donna Seba. We're taking a break. Now, don't forget to go to Heidi's site, Buttons and Dollars, or go to HeidiMarble.com. Buttons and Dollars will pop up. Find out more about her story. Get her book, and you will help also to support those who have challenges that some of the money from the book is being dedicated to. This is Donna Seba. We're going to be taking a break. Don't you go away. We have a lot more good stuff to share. We're going to be right back. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Well, I wanted to tell you that telephone lines are open, 877-876-5227. If you're calling in from Canada, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Or 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. And all you have to do when you call in is give me your first name or your initial. If you're a first-time listener to The Donna Sebo Show, welcome to our listening audience. We're so delighted you're able to join us. But all you have to do is give me a buzz. And I just need from you your first name or initial and where you're calling from. And it's just absolutely delightful to be able to share my skills and talents with you. I've had some people ask, Donna, do you do this privately? Well, of course I do. I've been involved in doing counseling and readings for people for a good 40 years plus, and it's something that it is my pleasure. I believe in empowering people, and that's how I use my skill. I'm not a fortune teller, folks. I am an intuitive that will give you insights, and you know what? Then you have a choice of doing something with it, or you can totally dump it out the window for all I care, but it's going to be up to you. Now, by the way, I do have some other things, and thank you for your stories. Thank you for the wonderful things that you've been sending me, and send me an email if you have a story, a recipe, something special you'd like to share. I'm always interested in receiving it from you. You can contact me at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. And I'm more than happy to use the material, but I do have to tell you, sometimes I cannot respond to you. Don't feel badly, but I'll get back to you as quickly as I can. We have a caller on the line. I want to welcome you to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Good afternoon, Anne, Philadelphia.
In Philly. Oh, my goodness. I bet you it's just gorgeous this time of the year.
It is, but we're having a torrential downpour at the moment, and we're all looking forward to the wonderful holiday and the beaches.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm sorry you're having the torrential downpour, but just figure it, that's liquid gold. I live in the Northwest. It's always raining. If it's not raining, it's going to be. So we just have adapted to it. But, oh, my goodness, everything gets so green and beautiful, and the flowers in the spring just really work overtime.
And so, how do you get to see the sun?
We pray a lot. Of course, I'm exaggerating a little bit. You know, here in the Northwest, there's a joke. I had a relative. I have to share this with you before I give you my impressions. This is so much fun. We had a relative that came to visit us from Washington, D.C., and he went into an office in Seattle to meet with some associates. And before they had a wonderful meeting, before he leaves, a man brings out a book. I don't remember what book it was. Brings out a book, and he said, okay, Ray, now you've got to do something before you leave this room. And Ray said, oh, well, what's that? He said, you have to swear that you will lie to everyone that you meet that the sun ever shines in the Pacific Northwest. Because when he was here, the weather was just spectacularly gorgeous, and he said, what? And they said, we don't want any more people knowing about the beauty here in the Northwest. So you've got to swear.
Sun?
You won't tell them the truth. So
he brought the sun, didn't he, Donna?
I guess he did, but whatever happened. So we often in the family, we just laugh about that because here in the Pacific Northwest, it is absolutely gorgeous country. And we just, the people say, does it ring there? I understand it's gray. We say, oh, yes, it's very gray. Anyway, let's get down to business with you, Anne. First thing that I am focusing on with you is you've got to be willing to speak your truth. And the reason I'm saying this, and I say your truth, because there are some situations evolving. Now, they popped up a few months ago, and you sort of skirted the direct answer approach because you really didn't know what to do. You really couldn't find the right words in your mind, so you just sort of went, just skirted around it. But this is going to raise its head again. Now, I don't know if you're on a committee. I don't know if this is something with the family, if it's something with business. I just don't know at this moment. But what I would say to you is, when this comes up again, when questions are posed to you or statements are made that you know do not have good fact behind them, speak up. You have a way, a presence about yourself that it's sort of like the old-fashioned E.F. Hutton commercial. When E.F. Hutton speaks, people listen. It's the same with you.
Except for the family court judge.
Well, don't worry about the family court judge. The family court judge listens more than what you think. And you just need to be aware. You must think, and you must put your words together carefully. But when the opportunity comes, you can speak clearly, concisely, and effectively. And it will make a difference.
Because, Donna, I usually do speak my mind. That's why I'm a little bit surprised that it's showing that I may be skirting issues and not speaking my truth.
Okay, what I'm trying to convey to you, and maybe the way I'm using my words, I am not saying you are not a person that will not speak the truth. I am saying something reared its head a few months ago. You did not know how to address it. This is not a criticism. This is not a criticism.
No, I'm not taking it that way.
Yeah. What it is, it's how can I handle this more effectively? How can I use my words to create a picture in someone else's mind that will bring the effective result that is necessary? That's the key.
And I understand what you're saying. Are you able to say in what category?
At this moment, I do not know. That's okay. Not being shown to me.
Okay.
All I'm doing is giving you some information. So whether it's personal, business, whatever it may entail, it is how you use your words to create an image in someone else's mind.
All right.
You know, let me just use an example. If you're watching a moving scene in a movie where you are just totally engrossed in that actor or that actress's performance, let's say a live performance, if you stop and think about it, it is not just words, but it is emotions, presence, you are acting.
All right.
You get what I'm trying to convey?
Yes.
So it is that presence and well-placed words. It's like, boom, it hits someone right between the eyes.
I understand.
That is where your power is, that you are an honest person, that you are open, no question. But there are times when words are used in a particular way with information, with an expression, people go, whoa.
Okay, I think I understand. And this is coming up again now. I think this may have happened in January, and it's coming up at the moment.
All right, so what this is, if you're recognizing it, what I'm just trying to convey to you, what is coming through my mind to you, is understand this. You will not lose, that's the word I'm getting, you will not lose if you think through. So sort of do some play acting in your head. Look at different scenarios that could be thrown in front of you. Listen to maybe some stories of some other people and go, well, if you were to do it over again, what would you do? Just sort of get that kind of a feedback.
Yeah, this is dealing with the mentally ill, and another situation has come up that I'm helping the mentally ill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is what Spirit is referring to, I believe.
All right. Now, stop and think of that, because when you are dealing with the words, two words, mentally ill, immediately, in most people's minds, there is a pre-boxed thinking attitude. But you're trying to get through, you're trying to break through their automatic imprint.
Yes.
Does that help you?
Well, yes, but it's not others and their impression of them. It's the people that are actually mentally ill.
There is that I'm not able to address at the moment.
Yeah, but that's, in other words, Spirit has already given me the answer, and I needed for you to say this to me for me to be able to deal with this eminently.
Good. I'm glad that that's helped.
Excellent. Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome. How did you learn about the show, Anne?
I have been listening on and off for years, and I think that you're one of the best programs on BBS. I love the programs that you do the first 30 minutes. Instead of reading books and searching newspapers, I can just listen to you.
Well, that's fabulous. Thank you. What did you think of our guest this afternoon?
I missed it because of the downpour, and also dealing with, I think you've done another program with a person who was also very ill and inspirational, which was excellent, and I would assume it was along the same path today.
This one was different, but the archive should be up in 48 hours, so you'll have a chance if you miss the show today. I think that this would be a very meaningful show to you. I think you'd enjoy it. So we have the archives now that they're able to put up fairly quickly of programming.
Okay. Before, sometimes it was a week or 2 weeks before they got them up.
That's right, because they have quite a team that they have to work with and quite a lot of work that they have to do. So
yes. No, I understand. He was doing everything himself. Am I able to ask you two quick questions, Donna?
Hon, I'm getting ready to go to break, and in all fairness, I try to limit it to one to each call.
Okay, because I haven't asked any question.
Okay, that's fine. Stay on the line, then, and when we come back, I'll get your question.
Thank you.
All right, dear. We're going to be taking a break. Anne is waiting. If you'd like to call in and chat with me this afternoon, here are the telephone numbers, 877 for the U.S., 877-876-5227, or from Canada, 888-815-9756. This is Donna Sebo. I know you're getting ready for the Memorial Day weekend. I'm so glad you're able to join us. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Anne to get her question, and just know you're going to be able to call in and chat with me as well. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Hello, this is Donna Sebo. We're going to be going back to Anne in just a moment. Hello, but in just a moment, what I want to do is give you our phone numbers here that you can call into if you'd like to chat with me. 877-876-5227 in the U.S. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. Also, 530-876-3222. Anne, what is your question for me today? Uh-oh. Did we lose Anne? Well, I think Anne has disappeared from the ethers for a moment. Anne, if you're listening, please just call right back in. I wanted to say, with the holiday weekend coming up, oh, my goodness, I had some clients that were coming in to see me yesterday, and they said, terrific, we totally forgot there's a big weekend coming up. So many of you are going to be taking a four-day holiday, maybe even a three-day holiday, whichever is best for you, depending on what your work schedule is. And just remember, when you're out driving, I want you to be, thank you, I got the signal that Anne is back on with us, but I want you, wherever you're going, please don't be in a hurry. I know traffic gets so heavy when we're wanting to get away for that big weekend, but I want you to enjoy yourself when you're driving, when you're with your family, if you're going to a special event. Take your time. Don't be in a hurry. You don't need to be in a hurry. Relax, enjoy your journey, and enjoy this wonderful holiday weekend that's coming up. Let's go back to Anne. Anne, what's your question for me today?
Yes, thank you. My current financial picture from present for the next time period, please.
All right. Now, when you're talking about the next time period, what I am looking at right off the bat is that you've got a year where you must be prudent. I am looking at you being aware of some of the changes that you're going to be able to evolve into your lifestyle that will add to your financial base. And I think that this is going to come about because of someone that you are going to cross paths with. You'll be sitting and chatting about things, and you're going to let them know that you're looking for a venue that will enable you to put your skills to use in a way and generate some additional income. And they are going to be saying, this is marvelous. We would just love to have somebody like you on our team. And I think that there actually is going to be as many as three different sources of income that will be available to you. I'm not really concerned about you relative to money because money always seems to flow in your direction, but you're changing your perspective of it. And as you're getting older, you're realizing you don't have to be stuck into a particular mindset or attitude, and you don't have to be forced to, quote-unquote, retire. So this is something I think that you're evolving through, and there's a lot of circumstances that are contributing to your being able to be more comfortable with the changes and adaptation in your life. But I do feel that you're going to have to be conservative for the next year.
I understand. Thank you, and have a wonderful weekend, Donna.
Oh, blessings, and I really appreciate your comments about the show. You know, we have a comment button on the BBS site. Please go and put your feelings about the programming in. I would just love to have you do that. So
I will do that right now.
Thank you so much, Anne.
Thank you.
Bye-bye,
Donna.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. All I need is your first name or your initial. Of course, I'd love to know where you're calling from. 877-876-5227. Or from Canada, 888-815-9756. You know, so often, it takes so much effort to get things accomplished to do it. We've got another caller, and I'm going to share a special story with you, should we have the time, about a Tibetan monk, so don't go away. This is Donna. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Barbara, and I'm calling from Tempe.
From where?
Arizona.
Oh, Tempe, Arizona. Okay, great, Barbara. Well, I know the weather's gorgeous there.
Yes.
Oh, so you're in for a fabulous weekend. Okay, Barbara, what I am observing with you is detail. Detail, 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 detail. The little things do count. And I have to chuckle because I'm getting an image of you going through all kinds of paper and just sort of sitting and looking at it and feeling like you're brain dead because you've got all of this stuff that has to be sorted and filed. And boy, I can equate with that. My gracious, I know what that's like. So what I'm saying to you is be aware that paying attention to detail is great. And if you can enlist the assistance of a friend that maybe can sit with a couple of boxes of file folders at their feet, and some labels, and if you want to do it on a computer, great. If you want to have them handwrite it out, just make sure that they can print clearly. And just go and start putting stuff in folders and labeling the folders. Once you get the papers all organized and in order the way you want them, then you're going to be able to go through and either put them in a specific arrangement that allows you to have easy access to them, or you'll know what to toss and pitch. So you've got a mixture of things that are going on here, and I really think there is so much detail you're having to pay attention to, and I'm getting six. So I don't know if it's the next 6 weeks or the next 6 months, but I really get excited for you because I think that once this all of this stuff is taken care of, whatever you happen to go through, then it's like there's a big burden off your shoulders. But don't be afraid to ask for help if you need it. And I'm sure you got someone, you know, treat them to fried chicken and brown rice. I don't know, whatever they like. Or maybe a hot fudge sundae, you know, where you get an extra scooping of hot fudge sundae sauce. I don't know, whatever would work. But make it fun, and I think you will be surprised at how much you get done.
Okay.
Because that detail, attention to detail, and removal of what I consider clutter, and it's a lot of it's important things that you just need to have cataloged and filed and put into a place that's comfortable for you.
Okay.
What's on your mind, Barbara?
Well, I saw a house yesterday, and I wanted to offer them a rent with option to buy. Do you see that being agreeable to the owners?
I would just keep it there on an open burner. I just let it simmer. I think that that's a very good proposal, and that there are those people that are going to be willing to consider it. But I wouldn't just stop with the one person. I'd just keep on working with it. Also, what I'd like to see you consider is maybe talking to someone who is in the real estate industry itself that maybe can give you some insights on how to make some various proposals that would work very well for you. But using rent with the option to buy, I think, is a very, very good one. I think that's an excellent proposal.
And looking at a particular house that I think would be marvelous to set that deal up. And
well, don't just focus on one house. I would like to see you find three or four to present this proposal to.
Okay.
And I think that that would be giving you an option to work with. And if you had like a two-year contract, at the end of the 2 years, one, they've got the advantage. The house is going to be taken care of. They're just not going to be renting it out, but they're going to be in that positioning where they have money coming in that covers the payment. Two, they would have access to using whatever equity if they wanted to, depending on the arrangement that they would have with the bank. There's a lot of options that are beneficial to someone that's open to doing exactly that. And in the interim, you can also work at saving some money additional to put down.
Absolutely.
So I think it's a win-win. So don't get discouraged over this, but I would make sure I made an approach to more than one house with this offer.
Okay.
Because there are some people that would like to sell their place privately, and in that case, you want to be sure that you have a good real estate attorney. But so that you don't make an agreement that's not going to serve you well. Uh-oh, hon, I'm out of time.
Oh, thank you, Donna. I love your show.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Donna. I'm so sorry. My goodness, we're out of time already. I want to thank Heidi Marble and for being my guest today and for all of you who support the show. Thank you very much. We really value you. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Life is so precious. It belongs to you. Live it with zest. This is your life. Make it special. You are special. God bless. Have a fabulous weekend. I'll be here live on Monday. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
Got a tape loop running through my head. Got the same sad story in my bed. Got an answer for whatever you just said, and I'd rather be anywhere else instead of wondering why I never look a mirror in the eye. The things I'm really scared of, the truth or the lie. It's the same conversation, but nothing ever changes. Nothing ever changes. Nothing ever changes. It's time to figure this out. Time to figure it out. And I'm left holding nothing while you I made I wouldn't replace. There are moments when I stole in your grace and maybe burned through a bit of hope and faith. But it's time to figure this out. Time to
Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned into The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong, and how you can really honest to God take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour